Hey, welcome back.
That was overly cheery, considering we've been sitting here for 15, no, more than 15 minutes.
Like an hour.
Trying to figure out our audio and post it on Instagram that we weren't going to be uploading. And now we're like, let's just record.
Just drive.
Nobody knows what that means.
Yeah. Just for reference, the Just Drive thing is us making fun of the podcast Case File.
Yeah, there was a couple of episodes where he was like, oh, I'm going to do the voices for, like, some of the cases.
Well, he didn't say that. He just did it.
Yeah, he just did it. But, like, Mary Beth Stauffer and Jason Wilkes is the episode. I can't remember what number it is. But he, like, yells in it.
You have a good memory.
I've listened to it so
many times. He yells so much, and it's so shocking. You're sitting there and you're like...
He's like, terrifying. Sorry to those who I just scared. But yeah, we've been trying to figure out the audio for ages. We don't even know if this is going to work or if it's going to sound ridiculous. There was all this background noise that was
It isn't a No Contact Club episode if we're not complaining about technology.
Exactly.
We are boomers inside of millennials' bodies.
Pretending that they're Gen Z.
Yeah. That's lit. Fam.
TikTok.
Yes. But anyway, I ended up having a grump because I couldn't.
Be bothered. It's so annoying.
But anyway, we're here now. We love recording.
We're so happy to be doing this.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into the chat.
Do podcasting. Let's do podcasting. Yay.
Anyway, it's nice to be back, even though we've just spent how long complaining that we have to do this.
We're like the podcasters. I can't talk. We're the podcasters who always complain about being podcasters.
Like a celebrity complaining about being a celebrity. Like,
are you calling yourself a celebrity?
Yeah. I got recognized the other day.
Did you?
No. Can you imagine if I did though? I'd be like, what the fuck?
I would cry and be like,
it was just Ellen.
It was just my boss.
Yeah.
It was just my therapist when I said hello walking in the door.
Anyway, it is good to be back. We're happy to be back. A few people said that they liked Dad's music, which was nice.
Yeah.
We're happy we hopefully managed to blend it in okay.
I think we did.
It sounded all
right. And I am
audio professional.
Audio professional, as you guys can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know how to do
stuff.
Yeah. What are you up to?
Thinking of something to answer that question with. I've been reading heaps of books lately. I set myself a goal of reading, I think, 30 books in a year, compared to my beautiful wife, who last year read like over 120, I think, and this year her goal was originally going to be more, but she's studying this year, so she wants to keep it in check. But
Like it's some kind
of control thing.
But it's like this demon on her shoulder, like, read more books, you wretch. I don't know.
But I just read one called The Surgeon, and I had no idea, but it's actually the first book in the Rizzoli and Isles series. You know that TV show? It's like a crime. They're like detectives. You don't know it? It's quite well known.
I've never heard of this in my life.
It's two women. Rizzoli's a detective and Isles is, I think she's like a forensic detective. I can't remember. But anyway, it's like the first book in that series. I didn't even realize it was based on a book and I didn't realize that's what I was reading, but it was really good.
I've literally never heard of that in my entire life.
Well, you're not cool, so.
I'm just not cultured enough.
You don't read enough books.
I actually don't. Yeah. Like
I listen to books. It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
I think it is.
It's not the same thing, Chloe. It's difficult listening to audiobooks, you know? You've got to, like, press play.
Yeah, that is pretty hard. And then pause if you want to get out of your car.
Yeah, if you finish walking and you have to, like...
What are you listening to at the moment?
I'm listening to The Stand by Stephen King.
What's that one?
It's really, really, really good.
Tell us about it.
It's,
Welcome to the...
Book club.
No, not book. Please just tell me the book. That was so bad.
It's one of his older ones, I think. It's set in like the 90s.
Yeah.
And it's basically, this is a perfect book for me to be reading in the middle of a global pandemic, but it's, oh, yeah, it's about a deadly super flu that comes in and wipes out like 99% of the earth.
Fun!
It is really good though. Like, I love like post-apocalyptic, yeah, and apocalyptic books and movies, yeah, yeah. So it tickles
the, and it's not like he's a bad author to read.
No, everything that he writes is like
so good.
It's so good. Yeah. No, I really am enjoying it.
Okay, good. So go listen to
it. You're like, okay, folks. Good. Fine. That's good.
You better not. I can't talk either. Anyway, I read a book recently, and I'm pretty sure I didn't bring it up on the last episode, but I have the memory of a goldfish, so maybe. But it's called Roanoke Girls. I know I've told you about it, but I don't know if I...
Just tell
anyway,
us.
Anyway, we'll have a super intense and not at all what I expected. Basically, this girl goes back to her like childhood home when her cousin goes missing, and it's just like you slowly get like you see, like, it's told from the point of view of her when she was a kid and also an adult coming back, like it goes back and forth. And the story is like, it went in a direction I was not expecting at all, but it was good. Like, it was
furries.
No. Yes. No. No, it was like sexual abuse. Like, it was,
oh,
like,
okay. Well,
so thanks for making a joke. But yeah, no, it was really good. I would recommend that book.
Good. Yeah. That's good. So
should we talk about that Dr. Phil video?
Yeah,
we watched?
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah. So I saw a TikTok that was about Dr. Phil and how he should be cancelled, and I was like, what's this about? And in the comments, someone was like, oh, watch this YouTube video. So it's called
The Cult of Dr. Phil.
Yeah, if you want to watch it. I think it's by Big Joel, I think is the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And it's just about this one specific episode of Dr. Phil, where this girl comes on, and she had told the producers not to have her
mother
biological
on.
Mother on, because she was didn't essentially like no contact, like she hadn't seen her for a long time, but they brought her on anyway, and she was like, I'm not happy with that. And this girl like has
a severe delusions,
yeah, and a multitude of problems, and he just like outlines all her traumas, like, you were raped, you had a stairwell incident, you had this and this happened, you
and
had
a miscarriage
and... yeah, and then like tells her off for behaving in certain ways. It's like, shouldn't you be more...
Because the whole reason why she was on the show is because of the fact that she had a delusion that basically her and this girl were in love. They'd never met. She stalked her on Instagram and all this stuff, and she had this delusion that she was in love. And it just so happened that this delusion started after this, you know, series of
horrible
consecutive
things, yeah,
traumas that she experienced. But it essentially goes into... what I mean I already knew this kind of about Dr. Phil, like,
yeah,
you just get a icky feeling from his,
yeah, from as an adult content. I used to watch it when I was younger,
yeah, same. But it kind of goes into how he is like really controlling, and how he's had his therapist license thingy taken off him because,
yeah,
he had a relationship with an underage girl.
Allegedly,
allegedly. And
he's just not great.
Yeah, and he does nothing. And
he doesn't help people.
Yeah,
his show is all about like glorifying and like making a spectacle out of mental illness. Like,
yeah, and with the front of, I'm helping you, I'm gonna send you to the farm or whatever,
yeah,
it is,
yeah,
retreat or,
yeah,
whatever, I'm here to help you.
And he's got like an audience sitting there like laughing at this,
yeah,
these people who are experiencing like real like problems and issues in their,
yeah,
life, so
devastating problems,
yeah,
yeah. So anyway, cancel Dr. Phil. That's hashtag cancel Dr. Phil. It's just pretty gross, like,
yeah, yeah,
watching. Except I still want to watch it. Like, I hate that...
It's like a train wreck. Like,
yeah, I hate it. I hate that about me, where I'm like...
I think that's a real human thing, though. I don't think that's, like, a flaw. Like,
oh, no.
You know, like, I
know.
Think it's, like, a human flaw.
Like, you want to watch, like, shitty reality TV.
Yeah.
Like, me...
Or Why We Slow Down When We Drive Past car crashes.
Yeah, because it's, like, my guilty pleasure is watching all of the old Big Brother UK seasons.
Yeah.
And there's so much on there, especially because it's back in like early 2000s, like 2004 to 2008, 10, 12, whatever. And there are so many problematic things in it. God, like so many, like transphobia, you know, like homophobia, freaking...
Racism?
Racism, just like casually thrown out everywhere. All the
bad things.
And it's sort of just, you can see as the show goes along what they tolerate and what they begin to realize it won't be tolerated by the audience.
Yeah.
Because I watched a season where it was Celebrity Big Brother, and they had Shilpa Shetty, who's a really famous Bollywood actress.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a really, it was like, it became this huge political thing where basically it was Joe from Steps. From S Club 7. And a bunch of other random people. And they were basically being really, like, super overt racism. Like, really, really bad. And Big Brother didn't step in and be like, that behaviour's not acceptable. They were essentially bullying her. And it became this huge international scandal where the British Prime Minister was asked about it. Where like the Indian, there was like protests in India burning a picture of one of the women who was doing that. Like it was really, really bad. Like it was terrible. And I think after that, you can kind of see them like knuckling down on certain behavior, because they've obviously learned from.
Really, like I feel like they have a responsibility.
Yeah, they absolutely
do. Within reason.
There was a record level of complaints that came through really about it. Yeah.
I guess it's good in a way that people were like, hey, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
But it sucks that they had to come to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Shall we get started, love?
All right, yeah.
What was that?
I don't know. Welcome to the No Contact Club. While we are knowledgeable about the topics we discuss because of our collective experiences, we aren't professionals. We research what we talk about, and our references are in the show notes. However, our episodes are not a replacement for professional medical help or advice. Our content can often be triggering or upsetting, so please, if you feel like you need support, you can reach out to us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com or see the links in the show notes.
You can hear kind of the wind outside in the background, and it kind of feels like it's getting into winter, even though it's in peak summer right
now.
Well,
last month of summer.
Yay! Thank
the Lord.
I'm so excited for autumn.
I know, just cooler weather.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we want to talk about parentification. And straight off the bat, I really want to quote a HuffPost article I found when I was researching this episode. It's the quote is the title, but I feel like it perfectly kind of sums up what it's like to live with a narcissistic parent. So the title is, the title is "The Narcissistic Parent's Psychological Warfare: Parentifying, Idealizing, and Scapegoating."
Ooh. So we've kind of talked about some of that stuff
previously
with like idealization and scapegoating, and
And
I guess devaluation comes like into that as well.
Cycle of abuse and stuff.
Yeah.
I just think it's such a good way of phrasing it, like psychological warfare. Like I feel like it perfectly kind of like encompasses what it's like to deal with a narcissistic parent, or like, you know, just a narc in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it kind of, I mean, using the term warfare is when I think about our childhood.
Yeah.
That's what I think of.
Especially like, psychological.
Yeah.
Like gaslighting and fucking with your head and all that kind of stuff. Like it's
pinning people against each other. Yeah,
triangulation.
Yeah, it's like the two words that I would use to I've only just decided now that one of these words is going to be warfare, but the other word I would use to describe our childhood was chaotic.
Yeah,
and I feel like those two are one and the same in a sense.
In
you know, you don't know what's coming when.
No,
and this is kind of what we're going to get into when we're talking about parentification.
Yeah,
So. Parentification, in a sense, is kind of like it'll be pretty obvious from the name, but maybe not to other people. Anyway, parentification is kind of like role reversal.
Yeah.
So, essentially, the child is obliged to act as the parent to their own parent or siblings. So they're put into that position of being the parent when they're a child.
Yeah.
And I know that you will probably have a lot.
It was really hard to write this episode.
Yeah. And I was like, don't worry about writing it. I'll write it. And you could just fill stuff in. And then I was just like, actually, no.
Yeah, no, like as the oldest, like, you know, it was
kind
was,
of a given.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily, but
yeah. And sometimes different children can become parentified, can have this role put on them, especially if gender's involved. Like sometimes,
yeah,
if it's maybe a dad, he might choose his oldest son rather than his oldest daughter, like that sort of thing. Not choose, like they choose someone, but yeah. But yeah, there can be two sort of types of parentification as well. There's that sort of physical side where the child's completing like physical tasks for the family, like maybe paying bills or assisting younger siblings in ways that it would usually be done by an adult. But also emotional as well, like, you know, the child kind of takes on that role of like confidant to the parent, like, you know, even sometimes acting as a mediator between like parents and family members.
Yeah.
I have a memory, and it's like a weird, not a weird memory, but I don't know if it fully comes into this or not, but my mum had said something to me about my aunt borrowing a videotape, and I had passed it on to my aunt just in passing, like as a joke, and she got mad. And when I told mum, my mum also got mad, and then it was like I had to go between the two of them and fix it,
like, and be like a mediator.
Them as two adults, like, yeah, like sorting it out, you know.
That doesn't surprise me at all. What? Our mum's aunt has got issues.
Our aunt.
My mum's aunt.
yeah. And just stuff like, as well, that whole emotional side. I don't know if it's, again, if it's similar to it, but like things like, oh, when we were going to see dad, like, make sure you mention how much you like such and such, you know, her new partner. Don't tell them.
I think that's more of that's leaning over towards like parental alienation, but I think it also comes into parentification as well.
It all kind of
It's kind of like you're expected to uphold certain values for the parent and present them to other people.
Yeah.
But I think a big one is in terms of emotional stuff is like being their therapist, like having them dump everything on you.
Yeah, like I know I've mentioned this story before, but having a week off school when mum broke up with her partner.
Yeah.
Or even us like sleeping in her bed with her when she was sad, or she would dump all her problems on me and tell us like about her sex life and stuff.
Yeah, there's a few weird memories that I have surrounding that, and it makes me interested to look into that kind of side of it where it's like not sexual abuse, but it's sexualized in a sense where you're put in a position of you're a child but you're seen as an adult, so you're given adult information.
Yeah, I've already started actually writing an episode about that.
Oh really?
Covert incest. Yeah.
But because it is a lot of that where, as I mean, for us there was five girls and mum was single mum, and so every time she'll break up with a boyfriend, go through issues, you know, it would be us going to our mum and being like, are you okay? We're like, here to support you.
Yeah, we'd hold her if she cried, and like,
which is, again, it's fine to cry in front of your children and
of course
and to express that you are sad to them, but when it borders on, you know, like we mentioned in the last episode with that email, she was saying her mum used her tears to manipulate her, and I feel like it's that stuff. Like as children, we don't know the difference between someone who's just healthily expressing their sadness,
and there's a difference between expressing your sadness in a healthy way and to like keeping your child off school for a week because you can't handle being by yourself.
Absolutely.
In terms of like physical parentification,
you probably have more to say on that than me.
Like I had like a weekend job at my auntie's shop, and I'd get, I don't know, like $50, sometimes more, and I'd spend that on like school food or like takeaways for dinner, bread and milk, sometimes cigarettes for mum if she was desperate.
But you know what I find quite interesting about that is there was this, because it was so normalized for you to be a provider in the family with buying us food and stuff when we had nothing, it was interesting to see how that expectation passed on to the younger siblings as they grew up and started earning jobs, money.
Yeah.
Because it was then expected, like, you need to help, you know, you need to chip in and buy school food or da 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 da, like, you need to...
But, like, you don't have to.
Like, it's well, I don't know, we didn't come from a normal childhood, but I would say it's pretty normal to expect your preteen, teenage child to maybe chip in terms of, like, what do you call it?
Like board?
Board.
Yeah.
Like saying, oh, chuck 50
Depending
bucks
on the country, too. I think that's quite common in New Zealand and Australia, but maybe less
not overseas. But
yeah, there's, another physical one example would probably be babysitting. So, like, I was babysitting from a really, really young age.
Yeah, I have actually got a memory of us, I think I was babysitting, and it was still when we were, before we moved to England.
Yeah.
So how old was I then? 13?
Off the top of my head.
Around 13?
Well, there was times that me and Mum would go out to dinner, so you
It was when the youngest was a baby.
Yeah.
And I remember I was left to babysit this baby, like a child, and she was crying her eyes out, like, because, and I didn't know how to deal with it, and I was like, if you don't stop crying, you're not gonna get a lolly or something, and that just made her cry even more. And then our family friend turned up and knocked on the door, and she was dropping off something. She's like, "Is everything okay in there?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine.
I'm
so good.
Looking after this baby like a pro."
Yeah, I am practically ripe for motherhood right now. I think ripe was the wrong word to use.
I think in some ways, like, all of us were kind of put in that role of parent, like, to a degree, like, looking after each other.
Well, you more than others. Like, I remember coming to you when I first got my period.
Yeah.
You were the first person that I came to, and I'm like, I got my period. And then I remember afterwards, either you or Mum said, why did you come to Chloe first when you got your period? I think you asked me that, actually. You were like, why did you come to me first when you got your period? And I was like, I don't know. You were just the closest person because you were in the room near
yeah,
the
yeah.
toilet. But
yeah, things like that, eh? Like looking after each other, or like making sure, I would always make sure you guys were getting ready for school, or
and it takes away your chance at being a child, takes away your chance at being a teenager, you know.
Yeah. So not
there's nothing
time.
There's nothing good about it, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, in the was it that HuffPost article?
Maybe,
I can't remember, but basically, it was mentioned on one of the articles when we were doing research for this, that there are literally, like, no positive outcomes to parentification. They're all negative. You know, your maturity and emotional resilience, which are sometimes mentioned by victims as positives, are directly related to underlying anxiety and displacement within the family dynamic. Like, that was a big mouthful of a sentence.
But it's true, because being mature and, like, growing up, I always used to say those things were
positive. And so many times when adults would come and talk to you, even as, like, a 15-year-old, adults would talk to you and be like, oh, you're so mature, and you'd be like, think that it's a really good thing. But actually, it just meant that you had to grow up too fast.
Exactly. And the child who's kind of put into that role, they're taking on so much responsibility, and there's no support from siblings or extended families, and it's not really acknowledged by anyone, especially the parent, which sucks. Like, even now, to not have my younger sisters, not you or Bridie, acknowledge me and be like, hey, you actually
were basically Mum.
It's kind of painful.
And the thing is, like, you're saying that that role that you were put in of not having anyone acknowledge that for you, thinking about it, it's like, that's normal. Like, not normal. There should be an acknowledgement there, but obviously there's not going to be. But that's it's expected of you as the oldest child to be the mother and to provide for us and to be.
But I think, it was only expected because of Mum's.
That's what I mean. Like, it's this normalized cycle of this is your job, even though it should not have been your job.
But then I got told off so many times for, like, bossing you guys about. But, like, sometimes I'd be like, oh, you need to go to bed, and get yelled at by mum for telling you guys to go to bed. But she was, like, drunk, and it was a school night, and you should be in bed, like, you know?
Yeah. And there's a family video which just shows Mother Chloe at it. We're all probably, like, 11 or 12.
Yeah, and, around there.
And it was a video of us over in Australia visiting our dad. And there's, like, I can't remember what happened, but one of us obviously hit the other one, and there's little Chloe in the background going, "Don't hit." And we're all like, okay. But at the time we would have been like, oh, shut up, you're not mum. But who else was going to tell us not to? I mean, obviously
dad did at that point,
but
it was just, like, ingrained in me to just automatically
You're not left with much choice
and
like what you're supposed to do, so it just becomes second nature.
So as in our case and most cases, the parent will often have alcohol or substance abuse disorder, and I think that's common just in general with narcissists, parents. Like,
there's, like, probably a plethora of
problems. I'd love to see, like, a Venn diagram, like, percentages and stuff of how much it overlapped. They also might have experienced, like, neglect or abuse as a child, also very common with narcissistic parents.
Yeah. Have we done generational trauma?
Not really, no.
Like, we've covered it a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah, but not
this
properly.
This really, like, to me, this really boils down to generational trauma.
100%.
Like, we're talking about, say, our mother. I'm not 100% sure what happened in her childhood, but say this person has had, you know, child abuse or neglect or, you know, experienced trauma
that they
as
might
a
not
child.
Even recognize as trauma
because it was normalized.
Yeah,
and then now they've grown up with this trauma that's crafted this personality that then gets passed on to the children, that then gets passed on to their children, and it just keeps going on and on and on and on.
They also might not have sufficient emotional support from other adults. You know, maybe they suffer from a mental illness, but they're not getting help for that.
Well, because again, that comes into generational trauma. Because you think about it, if both of us were in that position where we're totally not self-aware, we're not self-aware enough to notice that, you know, we have our toxic behaviors, we're not self-aware enough to know that we are mentally ill, whatever. Of course, if I'm going along ruining someone's life and ruining my partner's life or ruining my children's life, you're not going to sit there and go, this needs to change. You're just going to see it as a normal, oh, that's just Portia, you know?
And then it gets normalized for our kids and our kids' kids until somebody breaks the cycle, which is what we're doing.
Yeah.
But
also, I want to add in one of the two huge factors that can create, you know, perfect conditions for parentification is, you know, divorce, which
tick
and then financial hardship,
tick
everything just creates this melting pot of
not great stuff.
But it just creates a melting pot of conditions that that it creates this space for parentification to occur.
Yeah, where something is just waiting to happen, basically. Like, it would be a surprise if those things didn't happen.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So we mentioned earlier that there are zero positive outcomes to parentification. Something that Portia already touched on that is pretty much inevitable is losing your own childhood. Like, it literally disrupts the natural process of maturation
of being a mature adult and being able to emotionally regulate yourself and your coping mechanisms and everything, because you're pretty much, like, streamlined through into
you're a grown up now
into adult without having the foundations in place of adulthood.
Like, it's so hard to talk about, and I had said to Porsche that I wanted to mention that we never cry on this podcast. Like, we never get emotional or, like, teary, like, where you can hear it in our voices like that.
Yeah. But I thought you were going to cry for a second. I'm like, whoa, should I be recording this?
No, like, there's like one or two people, like, I cry in front of Ellen quite freely, and outside of that, I am very careful about who I cry in front of. And Portia's the same, like, we don't express our emotions that well.
We don't express our vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because I express certain emotions well, and so do you.
Yeah.
It just depends what they are.
Very, very good point. But yeah, so even though we're like, oh my god, this is such a difficult topic, especially for me to talk about, I sound fine, like I sound totally okay, and I think...
And inside you're like...
Yeah, literally, I'll probably cry tonight. No, I'm fine.
Trauma.
So I think it would be easy to listen to this and be like, oh...
They're fine.
They're fine, like, yeah. But, like, it's really hard for me to talk about this because I literally lost my childhood.
Yeah.
And that's something I talk about with my therapist all the time because as a kid, all I did was act like an adult, like act like a parent. And yeah. And
have to deal with adult situations.
Yeah.
Your whole childhood was spent acting as a parent and you never got the opportunity to be a rebellious teenager.
Yeah.
To be a normal kid who goes around playing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. But,
I do want to talk about what happens when you're all grown up and, you know, after having experienced parentification, what it's like to be then an adult who has been through that.
Chloe. I can answer that. Anxiety. depression. Tick. Eating disorders. Substance abuse.
Oh, that's not me.
Anxiety. I think anxiety in general, but also there's this real fear of like abandonment and loss and sometimes like a difficulty handling rejection, which
are you just calling me out right now? All of these things I'm like, okay, substance abuse, yeah, sometimes,
like the amount of times I think you said, but the amount of times I got called like little mother and told how good I was for not playing with the other kids but doing dishes or changing my baby sister's nappy, like, it's fucked up. Like,
yeah,
you spend your whole childhood not being a kid and instead you're ignoring your own like needs and desires and just the act of like growing up in general.
Yeah,
to like focus on your mum who's a grown-ass adult and yeah, should go to therapy.
Yeah. And it's like, then when you grow up, you think you still need to do that. Think you still need to you feel still beholden to your mum,
mm-hmm,
even though she's an adult and so are you, and your lives are completely
should be separate
in terms of the
yeah
way in which you guys live your lives, but somehow it turns out being your responsibility, and you know, you'd have to live with her when she gets old. And
how many times did mum say that to us? Yeah, who's gonna look after me when I get old?
Yeah, like, I know,
fucking look after yourself.
Yeah. Also, no, I would be happy to look after her if she had been
a better mother. Yeah, you kind of become this like compulsive caretaker, like,
yeah,
a real people pleaser, which I'm sure neither of us have experienced.
No people pleasers. Get out of here.
Yeah, like, it's this real, you want to make everyone happy because that's what you did when I was a kid. Like,
and
that's why I did the dishes after, like, a family, you know, would have a get-together and I'd start taking the dishes out because I'm like, this is what good girls do and I'm a good girl. Like,
yeah,
even though I wanted to go out and play on the trampoline with you lot, I'm like, no, I have to do dishes.
But talking about also, like, caretaking and people-pleasing and in regards to when we're thinking about parentification as well, mm-hmm, is it's quite, you think about people pleasing and it's like, that's the way that we've said it before, but that's the way that we learned how to manage people's emotions.
Yeah.
And so it's all learned behavior. We learn that by you being the parent and by you people pleasing and by you becoming this caretaker to everybody,
mm-hmm,
that manages people's responses to you.
Yeah.
And definitely, and gets you by in life. And so it's
control as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like a survival mechanism when you're a child, but then when you're an adult, it becomes, what do they call it? Like maladaptive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maladaptive. Yeah.
Maladaptive, yeah.
Yeah, because that control thing's massive for me. Like, when I was a kid, like, I would have to, my way of controlling things would be, like, hiding mum's keys so she didn't drive when she'd had too much to drink, or just little things like that. And so now, it's like, people-pleasing is a really good way to, like you said, control how other people see me.
Yeah, and it's so disingenuous.
It is. As well,
it's so disingenuous.
I will do things I don't want to do just to make other people happy.
Yeah, it's so disingenuous for us to be sitting there going, I'm going to act this way, I'm going to put this emotion on my face to manage what I think this person is thinking in order to get the right response. Like, it's bordering on, like, manipulation, but obviously...
In a, yeah, a different... like, coming from a different way.
Yeah.
I think a really... we all, well, there's two things we always say. We always talk about therapy, but also boundaries.
And like, we also say, we always say this.
I know. I think we should go through our episodes one day and count how many times we say, we always say this, but...
We should just think of another thing to say.
Maybe like, it can be our slogan as well as stay classy. We always say this, but stay classy. But yeah, boundaries. Like, I wish we were all taught what boundaries are and how to put them in place and why they're so important. Because... Yeah. Having a boundary, or just being able to say no, is massive.
It comes into it with you saying, I do stuff that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Because you want to, you're a people pleaser. That's absolutely you being disingenuous to your own boundaries and your own needs. Wants and needs.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, that's it. Like, our needs were not met as children. We were taught to ignore anything. You know, we were taught to ignore our needs in order to make other people happy.
Yeah.
And now as adults, it's like, that's...
You've got to get, like, in tune with your own needs again.
Yeah, and it's really fucking difficult to...
Yeah, and a therapy, like, definitely does help with that. But I think a lot of it is learning how to, like, listen to yourself and recognize, like, okay...
What you need.
Yeah, like, someone says, do you want to go to the pub? And you're, like, instantly feel anxious, like, oh, I really don't want to go. Like, listen to that and honor it and be like, hey, I don't feel like it tonight, you know?
Yeah, and I struggle with this a lot, but in terms of when you say no, no is enough.
Yeah.
Like, no isn't a discussion, no isn't a chance for them to try and change your mind. I mean, this is to do with consent as well, but your no is enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to get away from this feeling of oh no, I can't because of da 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 da, and I'm really so sorry. and I'm apologies for any inconvenience. It's like, oh no, I don't feel like going.
Yeah,
and that should be it.
And you don't have to say sorry.
I really wish that we had, like, I think, again, I'm gonna say it, we've said this before, but but I wish that there was, like, a curriculum in school to teach this kind of stuff, like, to teach mental health and to teach boundaries and to teach
that's what I mean, it's so
how to regulate your emotions
and listen to yourself.
Yeah,
and I think that would be, like, I would love that if that was a thing, but it's not.
No, so wishful thinking.
Like, in terms of, like, learning how to listen to yourself, I think meditation can be really helpful, but that doesn't work for everyone. I know when I first started to try it, I just fidget and my mind goes everywhere, which I know is really normal. But even just, like, you know, writing in a journal or finding what works for you. Like, some people find that, like, inner child work can help, like, get in touch with the kid inside who didn't deserve to have that much weight on their shoulders. And I read online, it was like, you know, some people shy away from that whole inner child thing.
Yeah,
like,
I hate it.
Yeah. But you can kind of call it whatever you want. Like, you can just say, oh, my younger self, or little whatever, or, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever works for you.
Just give yourself a random name.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, sorry.
Sorry about it, bro.
Yeah. And sometimes even just, like, acknowledging what happened can go a long way. Like, accepting that, yeah, you had too much pressure put on you as a child, like, from your narcissistic mother. And, you know, that fucked you up for whatever reason. But just acknowledging that you missed out on what you wanted and needed can be really helpful.
Yeah.
It's almost like grieving what was lost.
Yeah, okay. So, my therapist always says that to me about, like, grieving. And I sometimes I get, like, at the end of last year, I got really, really down, and I didn't know why. I was like, this isn't as, it's like worse than I would normally get, sort of thing. So I went to talk to her and said, I just feel so sad. And she's like, maybe you need to just feel sad. Like, sometimes you just have to feel sad for a while.
Mm.
And so I started, like, because it's really hard for me to be sad towards myself like that, I started, like, creating time where I could be. So, like, I would put, like, rain sounds or something not distracting in my headphones, and then, like, stretch or lie in bed, and I just, like, talk to myself. Like, it sounds really lame, but, like, I just, like, talk to myself or talk to mum or, like, cry or get mad or whatever it is, like, without trying to analyze the feeling, without trying to distract myself, like, just feeling sad or whatever it was, to, like, Just accept it. Like,
accepting okay, that that's part sad. Of you.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, we don't want to feel uncomfortable emotions.
No.
And as a child, we were always taught that uncomfortable emotions were bad.
Yeah.
It was like, don't have any negative emotions, which is so unrealistic for a child, because they're literally learning how to cope with their emotions.
Yeah.
And so it's like, of course now we struggle with accepting, you know, the bad side as well as the good. And I'm saying bad very loosely,
because
being sad and being angry and stuff isn't inherently bad, but it feels bad.
Yeah.
And to us that's like alarm bells, like don't feel sad.
Yeah, like learning how to feel feelings, I think, is a really it's really important, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as well another thing is like finding ways to kind of honor the younger version of you. Like, it's something I need to do more of, but it can be just like going to a playground, or like learning how to skateboard or roller skate because you always wanted to when you were a kid, or going to a water park or a theme park, you know,
like allowing yourself the space to do things that are considered childish.
It's just part of the reason why I love working with kids, because I can like fuck around and act like an idiot and make fart jokes, and it's fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was in New York with our stepdad, and we were like walking through the park or something, and I kind of was just like, okay, I'm in New York, I'm never here, I'm just gonna do whatever
I'm never here.
But one of the things that we were doing is when we were walking through one of these parks where you could see the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And we came across this really fucking random merry-go-round that was it was all stained glass, but it was like really pearlescent kind of glass. There's a particular word for it, but I can't remember. And it was this art installation, but it was also interactive, and you could pay like, I don't know, $3 or something and go and enjoy this ride. And there were only kids on it, and I remember walking up with our stepdad and being like, let's do this. And he's like, oh my god. And I'm like, no, I don't care, I will pay for you. I'm making you go on this thing. And so we went on this.
How often are you in New York? Like,
and how often do you get to see this like fucking trippy ass like merry-go-round in the middle of the park at nighttime? Exactly. That's all lit up with this beautiful classical music playing, and it's like chilly and cold, and like, oh my god, it was just so good. But it was it was just so good because, like, we were the only adults on the ride.
And you were having fun.
Yeah, and all the other parents and all the other adults were, like, watching their kids on it. And me and our stepdad were just, this like
50-something-year-old man.
Yeah, we're just having so much fun and, like, videoing each other. And then I got told off by the...
Attendant,
because I didn't buckle myself in. He's like, buckle up before phones or something like that, and I was like, okay
sorry. But just fun, like, just having fun,
allowing yourself to be a child again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a big thing.
Mm.
So boundaries, especially if you're maybe still in contact, boundaries are good.
Yeah,
recognize it's not your fault, and tell your story was one of the suggested things on one of the blog posts I read, which we have a lot of experience with that. We're literally doing a podcast about it now. where we tell our stories every week. So.
Yeah.
And for some reason you guys listen to us. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Do you want to plug all of our socials?
Yeah, you can email us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com. We are The No Contact Club on Facebook and at The No Contact Club on Instagram.
Yeah.
We're thinking about getting a TikTok.
Because
there's a lot of, I see a lot of like trends about like mental health and
narcissistic
parents and especially mothers, so we're like toying with the idea, but we'll see.
I think TikTok opens us up to more
criticism
because people, TikTok is a little bit like Twitter, where It can be really good, or it can be a shitstorm, yeah, and everybody somehow finds
you know,
critiques
to
bestow upon you when you don't necessarily ask for them.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll think about it.
Yeah,
but thank you so much for listening, everyone. Yeah,
thank you. Stay classy.